Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hope you're ready for a pair of Game 7s tomorrow night. Boston, Toronto, San Jose, Vegas, both going to Game 7. Sharks winning it in double overtime in Vegas. They got outshot horribly. Vegas feels like they probably should have won the game. They didn't. Boston 4-2 over Toronto. That's the better team winning the game. Norris finalists are out. Mark Giordano, Brent Burns, and Victor Hedman. The Amerks lose to Toronto 3-2 in overtime. They're down 2-0 in their best-of-5 series. The Marlies, of course, led by head coach Sheldon Keefe. Hey, speaking of Sheldon Keefe.
He's really bright. He's definitely heavily into the analytics. Like, not mildly into the analytics, but of course, heavily into the analytics. So he was more a rough-and-tumble junior hockey player, played 120 NHL games. Well, it wouldn't surprise me if that's the guy Buffalo is isolated right now, regardless of how long the Marlies playoff run goes. And so I think when people call up your show, show up in the Bulldog, and they say, why are the Sabres taking so long? Well, they may have something already set with Sheldon Keefe. Right. I don't know that for sure, but it wouldn't shock me.
That's Greg Brady from Fan 590 with Sal Capaccio on Sports Talk Saturday. Tonight, Washington, Carolina, Nashville, Dallas. In the NBA, Golden State, Boston, Toronto, and Portland all get wins. Every one of those series is 3-1 for the winners, except for Boston. They swept. Yankees lose Aaron Judge and win a game. Judge to the injured list. Jays and Mets win, and PGA Tour goes to CT Pan, the RBC Heritage Open, because Dustin Johnson did not close well. Those are your sports headlines. Next update on the way, bottom of the hour.
Our hot Twitter topic of the day. Let's bring you the Wester hot Twitter topic of the day. You can get involved in this, and one of you is going to win something today. We'll tell you about that in a second. The topic is, Brayton just tweeted it out on the WGR account, so we're looking forward to all of your replies. We're going to steal the topic from Sal's article, which is up at WGR550.com. In the first round, the Bills should trade up, trade down, stay at 9. So here's what you do. Tweet us a reply. And Brayton, in the 8 o'clock hour, will pick one winning reply, so what they should do and why. And Brayton will pick one winner. We'll announce that person in the 8 o'clock hour, and that person will get a $25 gift certificate from Tim Hortons, courtesy of Wester. Welcome to Wester, New York. Again, it's the Wester hot Twitter topic. All you need to do is tweet us your opinion, your answer, at WGR550. Please make sure when you tweet us, use the hashtag WesterHotTopic.
And give us something good. Don't just leave a single word or two word response.
What's the hot topic?
Trade up, trade down, stay at 9.
Okay.
And why? So at WGR550, hashtag WesterHotTopic.
I got another hot topic for you. An additional one. Does home field advantage mean anything? Is home field advantage overrated? Let me make a case really quickly.
Home field and home ice, home court, everything?
The Super Bowl last year.
Yeah.
Who went to the Super Bowl?
Rams and the Patriots.
Where did the Rams win the NFC Championship?
Well, they won a tainted one in New Orleans.
On the road. Where did the Patriots win the AFC?
Stupid Patriots won in Kansas City.
On the road.
Yeah.
Now I've got Winnipeg and St. Louis. All these games won on the road.
Until the final game of the series, the road team won
every game. First team won a road game.
Yeah.
Toronto loses at home.
Toronto's won twice in Boston in this series. I think they won games 1 and 5.
Now, Carolina, Washington, that series has held up home all the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got Boston going home for Game 7. You've got San Jose going home for Game 7.
Columbus won the first two games in Tampa.
They did. So. They did. They swept. So, buy or sell. Buy, sell, trade. User from the Instigators. Home ice, home field, overrated.
I'd still rather be home for a Game 7 if the Sabres were in a series.
Because it's fun, because you're a fan?
It's my crowd. I've got my crowd.
But I mean, does it...
And hopefully they can play off of that.
Does it mean less than maybe you thought it did? Here's the stat on this.
Sean Tierney has a stat. You're going to tell me it does. I'm still going to
I'm not going to tell you anything.
I'm going to say no. I still think having home field, home court, home ice, whatever, yes, I'd still think it's significant.
What's significant?
Maybe you win more often if you're at home in Game 7.
But how much more often would you win for it to be significant?
I have no 75% idea.
75% of the time or
52%? Well, yeah, it's not 51. I would think it's got to be at least 60% or higher.
From Sean Tierney, when the away team wins Game 6 to force Game 7, they win Game 7 at home 58% of the time.
I thought it would have been higher than that.
Again, that's only when winning Game 6 on
the
road.
Like Boston yesterday.
Yes. Like the Flyers 8 Easters ago.
You didn't have to cite that one.
I'm thinking about that Flyers series. What can I say? Easter. Easter is about Ville Leino scoring at the arena, you know?
That's about Ham being elite.
Ham's not elite. We've established that Ham is not an elite meat. We're getting a lot of things done today.
Sheldon Keefe, any thoughts? If we like Sheldon Keefe, we should be rooting for Toronto to advance past Boston, right? Some Babcock stays and Keefe is blocked and maybe the Leafs will let him leave the organization.
Babcock's not going anywhere.
If they get beat in Game 7 again.
And if Babcock were to get fired because they're going to hire Sheldon Keefe, then the Sabres would call Mike Babcock.
Well, yeah, I know that. Well, no, I'm just saying, if the Leafs are keeping Mike Babcock and Sheldon Keefe stays in Toronto, would Sheldon Keefe be available then?
I guess I don't understand the question.
You'd be rooting for Toronto to win, so they keep Babcock, which means Keefe is available.
But I think they're keeping Babcock either way.
Okay. See, yeah. I'm not 100% certain on that.
I don't think there's any way he's getting fired if they lose Game 7 in Boston.
Who goes in the volcano?
Nobody.
This is a sports franchise. We always throw people in the volcano.
Yeah. Nobody.
No?
No.
All right. I think he's under a lot of heat if they go belly up and blow a 3-2 lead.
Some good young talent on defense that they'll no doubt bring up in time. No, I don't think anybody gets fired from Toronto.
All right.
So, I can't root for Toronto to keep Babcock. And if they are going to... Boy, if they were to fire him, what am I supposed to do? Think that Sheldon Keefe is better than Mike Babcock in that scenario?
I don't know.
He might be.
I hope they fire him. I think that'd be fantastic if he's out on the market now. He might still not want to come here since we've gone down that road before, but I'd love to see that happen.
Yeah. No, I want, for the Sabres coach search, I guess there's not really any sort of press or time crunch at all. The only issue is if they want Sheldon Keefe or if they want anybody, are they going to be able to woo him and get him to take the job? Because
I couldn't talk to him while Toronto's still playing, while the Marlies are still playing.
Right. You would probably wait for that. But no, what I'm saying is there's this thing lately where the Sabres and or Bills are reported to want something and then it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Antonio Brown and then the report is they didn't want to give the money, or Todd McClellan and he didn't get offered the job. They've had exploratory things on a couple of fronts, but you're never going to hear flat out so and so turned them down for whatever reason. They didn't come together, but they have been exploratory on a number of different fronts and either turned away themselves or been turned away or whatever. So with Sheldon Keefe, is this the most attractive job for him? Think about. Did they try to talk to Kyle Dubas when Botchel got hired and they got denied? Mm. Maybe.
I don't remember.
I don't either. But you think about Jim Harbaugh is an answer here, right? Before Jim Harbaugh got hired as the coach of the 49ers, he's at Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
And did he tell the Bills he did not want to talk about the job, maybe? Or maybe it was because he and Jim Kelly got in a fight once?
You know, I think that was the story that was portrayed.
Okay.
That he wouldn't want to.
I guess what I'm saying is, the Sabres are not a slam dunk job for anybody to take. And if you are Sheldon Keefe, you might look at it and think, well, the GM is Jason Botchel. First off, do I think he does a good job? Do I respect him?
Mm-hmm.
Am I confident that there's going to be stability here? What are my expectations for year one? Right, this is a franchise coming off of two horrendous years that did not match expectations and were brought down by their own failures. So, what kind of expectation is there on Sheldon Keefe? How attractive is the job? There are good young pieces that would be attractive, no doubt.
Yeah.
And he would know if the Amerks have any number of players that he likes or not. He's probably scouted them extensively. So is it an attractive job?
Well,
that's what I would wonder.
And is it an attractive job in the context of what other jobs are available? Anaheim, Edmonton, Ottawa. I would think Ottawa by most accounts, although I know, you know, the trade they made with Vegas turns into a really good prospect player coming in. I would think most people would say Ottawa's at the bottom of the list of the four jobs that are available. Edmonton, obviously the attraction there is you get McDavid, you get Draisaitl, you have some good young talent there. And same deal here. I mean, you got Eichel, you got Reinhardt, you have Dahlin, so there's some good talent here. I don't know enough about Anaheim's system and their prospects to tell you how attractive that job is. So I would assume this is going to be a good-looking job for somebody because you do have some pieces in place here. You look, there might be coaches out there that think there's talent there and they underachieved and Housley was overmatched, whatever the case may be. I think it is an attractive job. The GM is going to be performing some kind of roster moves. Your cap space isn't bad. So I think there are some reasons to look at this. The biggest problem, honestly, with this job for me, as I would look at it, man, you're stuck with Tampa, Boston, and Toronto in the same division.
And maybe
Florida
maybe
just
Florida.
Got Quenneville, and they might get Panarin and
Steve
Bobrovsky.
Steve Yzerman just showed up.
Yzerman went to Detroit. Like, you would look at the division and go, all right, you know, Ottawa's going to be behind you. And
maybe.
We hope. And outside of that, it's a stacked division. I think that's the biggest problem with this job right now.
He's from Brampton. That okay. means anything to you?
Okay, that's not right. I don't know where in Ontario it is.
Oh, it's close. It's like near Mississauga. It's Toronto.
Okay.
He's from Brampton, so close to home-ish, I guess.
Yeah, Southern Ontario boy. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe he's waiting. Maybe he's just waiting for the AHL to get done to interview Chris Taylor formally, and or to if he's thinking about Sheldon Keefe, he's got to wait for the Marlies to be done to get, and then I assume get permission from Toronto to talk to Sheldon Keefe.
Well, I guess it would tell a lot if the Marlies advance and Taylor isn't hired, right? Because then Taylor's season is done, and you would talk to Chris Taylor, and if a move isn't made fairly quickly after that, then perhaps what Greg Brady is saying in that soundbite we played a little bit earlier. Maybe that's right, that they're waiting for that.
Yeah.
Waiting for Sheldon Keefe's season to end.
Right. Because, look, and now the Amerks, if they're one loss away from being eliminated, it's a best-of-five series, and they're down 2-0. So if the Amerks lose game 3, whatever, you can and Chris Taylor is your guy, then in theory the Sabres could just name him the coach this week if that's all they're waiting on for the Amerks to be eliminated and say, hey, congratulations, Chris Taylor's our new head coach. That could happen this week.
Do you think the Roger Ronberg thing is possible?
Roger Ronberg or Rickard Gronberg?
No, Roger Ronberg. Oh, that's okay. The guy whose name has been thrown out, okay. Right? The Frölunda coach?
Yeah. Because, well, Scott Burnside mentioned the Gronberg thing over the weekend, that when McClellan took
he's
the Kings job.
He's the national team coach?
Gronberg's the national team
and
coach,
and Ronberg
yes.
is Frölunda.
And Ronberg is Frölunda, yeah.
All right, they need different names. This is too confusing that they're the similarities
and they
in
both
names.
Have the little dots over the R,
two dots,
the O.
Whatever that's called. I don't know. I don't know how much, you know, for what it's worth, you know, Scott Burnside's write-up on Gronberg. Now again, that's the national coach. That's not Frölunda. Ronberg is the guy who coached Dahlin at Frölunda. And Olofsson would have been on that team, right? Okay. For what it's worth, Gronberg's, you know, the whole thing about said to be forward-thinking and open to new ideas and all this other stuff. You could draw dots with all the Swedes that are going to be here next season. That, you know, you'd have a guy with that background there. Gronberg played U.S. college hockey. He's coached in North America before in the minor leagues, so he's not far into the game of North America. So you could, I don't know. I mean, I'm just, whatever, that's fine. If you want to talk to one of those guys, great. I'm going to get back to where I was last week. I have reached the point where there's no guy who has been a former head coach in the NHL that excites me. So go find an AHL assistant. Go find an NHL assistant you like. Go to Europe. Go to college. I don't care. Just find a guy who can come in and be kind of forward-thinking and use the analytics that you need and put in some kind of defensive system where guys don't look confused and players aren't skating around wide open all the time. Whoever that guy is, great. Put him in place. And then go get a number 2 center and a top scoring winger and re-sign Skinner and go get another defenseman.
How do you feel about the Skinner front right now?
Yeah, you know, I kind of forgot about it. You know, I haven't been thinking about Skinner really since the season ended. It's weird. And now that you mention it, I think I'd still be leaning towards him re-signing here based on, you know, what he said, based on what Paul's been saying to us over the course of the season. I would still lean towards I expect him to re-sign unless there's a big gap in terms of money or Skinner wants another couple years, whatever, and the Sabres are drawing the line on term. I would still think he's going to be here. I'm not going to lie. Part of my thinking is hoping he's going to be here because if he isn't, That just adds another big hole for Jason Bottrell. He's already got enough things he's got to deal with this offseason. If Skinner's gone, now you got Eichel and what? You know, Olofsson, hopefully, on the top line. And you open up a big hole on the left side. You open up a big hole in your offense, which wasn't that good anyway last season to begin with. So I'm still hoping, anticipating, praying that he re-signs here because I don't want to think about another hole being opened on this team. It's too much stuff to deal with already, let alone now go try and find a 30-goal scorer to put on the left side of Jack Eichel.
How well do you remember that last Sabres team that was in the playoffs 8 years ago that lost to the Flyers? Do you remember much from that series, from that team? Who led the team in points? Who's on the team?
No. Yeah, no, you know me. I don't remember anything anymore. That series, I remember game five,
overtime.
Ennis in overtime,
yeah.
And I thought they were going to win. I was convinced they were just, that was it. They won in Philly. They won game five. They're coming home. They're winning on Sunday. They're going to the next round of the playoffs. Done deal. Over.
I think they had a pair of two-goal leads on Easter Sunday.
Did they?
Yeah.
Was it two? Really? And then game seven was a blowout, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's about it. I don't remember anything else from that series other than the game. I really can't recall anything from the first four games other than the game-winning goal by Ennis.
Didn't Miller get pulled in game seven after giving up like the fourth or fifth goal
something
like that?
Yes, I think so. Also, Derek Roy played in that game after not playing for 4 months, 5 months. Because he'd been hurt, and he came back and played just in Game 7, and they got smoked.
Did Pominville get hurt in that? Didn't he get hurt in a playoff series in Philly? Was that the year?
That was the year, yeah.
His ankle got sliced or something?
Yeah, something like that. Tore his Achilles or something.
Yeah. I feel like, yeah.
They also knocked out Tim Connelly in that series. The Flyers did. Mike Richards hit him against the boards and knocked him out.
Yep.
Wow, this is a long time ago. You start bringing up Tim Connelly playing for the Sabres. Now it does feel like it was ancient history.
Right.
Yeah, no, I don't. I just remember, honestly, you know, I think about that. The second half of the season, you know, was fun. They made a big push. You know, they did their version of the St. Louis Blues this year.
They did what the Sabres did over their 10-game win streak for half a season about. They were incredible.
Right. That's why it was fun. It's the last time we had fun talking about the Sabres.
You guys want to do some instant trivia and name me that entire lineup from that Easter game?
He can.
No.
Don't look at me.
Oh, boy.
It's too much work for a Monday morning. I'm going to have to need I'm going to need hints. No, I'd be struggling for that.
Yeah.
That is the last time it was fun to watch the Sabres.
No, there have been November was fun.
For 10 games.
Right. But it was fun to watch the Sabres in November.
For 10 games. That half a year was exciting. It was entertaining because I thought they were going to make a little bit of a run in the playoffs. And, of course, it all went kablooey.
And, of course, 2014-15 was fun.
In a different way.
It was, yes, but it was
No, you know what? I would never.
Very fun.
Actually, no, I wouldn't use fun. Would never use fun. 2014-15 was stressful.
Electric?
No, it was stressful.
It was electrifying. It was
painful.
Nah, so much
stressful.
Fun.
I'm trying to find how. I need a thesaurus. Somebody send me other words instead of stressful. Intense. That's not stressful, but it was intense. Polarizing. I have to come up with all these different fancy words to describe that. 803-0550. We are talking a little bit of hockey, but also a lot of football because of the draft, of course, this week. And we'll talk more about that with Sal at the top of the hour. And I'll spend the whole week telling you about TJ Hockenson and the Bills drafting a tight end and then getting a receiver in round two. And then after that, I'm good. You know, just Brandon Bean, go ahead. You can have the rest of the draft, buddy. Hockenson first round, receiver round two, and then I'll sit back, relax, and enjoy rounds 3 through 7. You can do whatever you want to do with your other 8 picks in the draft. Just get me a couple of skillful playmakers for your offense with the first 2 selections. Looking up, watching receivers catching footballs on SportsCenter. Yeah. Give me the first 2 picks, and then you're on your own, dude.
On SportsCenter, what they're showing right now is downfield threats. Is that what you're thinking about for a receiver? I'm not. They've got John Brown and Robert Foster are good like that. When I think about the receiver,
like to have a guy that gets open and can catch the ball.
True number one.
Yeah.
That's what I think the Bills should be looking for at the 9th pick or the 2nd round. Not that every receiver has to be super specialized, but Cole Beasley is not true number one and probably never will be. John Brown is not likely a true number one. Robert Foster, I still don't think so.
I don't think so.
A true X, a boundary receiver, what Calvin Benjamin was probably supposed to be.
Yeah,
right. Not as slow, not as unable to catch the ball, not as.
So you're thinking about a bigger target?
just
it is a smallish
receiver. A true X boundary receiver.
Yeah.
You know, that can stretch the field. Honestly, Antonio Brown. I mean, that's what the Bills were looking for when they called the Steelers about Antonio Brown, right? Was a true X receiver. So that's what I would be looking for in this draft at the 9th overall pick. They were just showing the list of guys that are downfield threats.
Right.
And maybe the Bills end up being a team that wants a bunch of downfield threats because Josh Allen is most effective so far when heaving the ball down the field. It's what he does. Maybe you stretch defenses and have...
Zay Jones and Beasley that can catch over the middle, underneath.
And you could have Hawk.
And your tight end, right.
You go Hawk 9
right.
and another downfield stretcher
at 40.
At 40.
Yeah.
And your offense is very much bolstered.
Yeah, and just give me those two.
I don't anticipate they'll go offense, or at least not receiving weapon with their first two picks. But one of the two, I would hope.
I still believe my prediction would be they will go some guy up front at 9, and then I would probably guess wide receiver in the second round. I think it's funny that it sounds like the tight end is a deep enough area that they could still address that in round 3. And a couple of the guys that were brought in on their visits are guys that might be still on the board in round 3 as far as tight ends. So if I had to make a prediction, I would say pass rusher 1, wide receiver 2, tight end 3. I don't have names for you, but just in terms of positions, I think that's the way the Bills are going to go with their draft. Again, barring a trade down and picking up additional picks, I think they'll address pass. I really do think they're going to address pass rusher first in the draft, unless they're blown away like by what, Jonah Williams or Jawan Taylor, one of the offensive linemen. I'd be surprised if it's not a pass rusher first and foremost. They do have to address that area. It is a need. It is something they have talked about. It is an area where you worry about the depth of this team in terms of the pass rush because of contract status on guys. So I'm like 99% certain they're going to take a pass rusher with their first pick.
99.
There are so many reasons why it makes sense for them.
Because
there are options, too. It's not like they're reaching for a guy.
Because of the way their roster currently sets up with Shaq and Jerry Hughes.
Yeah, and even Trent Murphy. And again, if you look at the board and see how things are falling, Ed Oliver, is he there? Is Quinnen Williams on the board? I guess the question I would have, and I don't know, we obviously don't have access to the Bills board. I'll try and remember to ask Sal. If you get past Bosa and Josh Allen, who's the next best edge guy, and where does this guy grade out on the board? Like, is there the third edge guy on the Bills' board? How high up is he on their board? Do they look at him and go, yep, that's a guy at 9, or there's a drop-off? There was one of the stories over the weekend was Montez Sweat apparently is now being taken off some draft boards around the league because of a health issue. So I'm trying to remember to bring that up with Sal. So I think there will be pass rushers available. It is a need, and I think that's where the Bills are going to go at 9. 803-0550. That does, by the way, tie in our West Her Hot Twitter topic of the day, which was tweeted out by Brayton on the WGR account. We look forward to your responses. With the Bills' first pick or in round 1, what should they do? Trade up, trade down, stay right at 9. Tweet us your opinion and with an explanation and tweet it at WGR550. When you tweet us, make sure you use the hashtag West Her Hot Topic. We'll pick the winner, one winning response in the 8 o'clock hour, and that person will get a $25 gift certificate from Tim Hortons. And that is courtesy of West Her. Welcome to West Her New York. 803-0550 to join us. 888-550-2550. Trade up, trade down, stay at 9. You can share your opinion on that. Hey, Paul Hamilton's going to be joining us next. Paul was in Rochester yesterday. A little bit of Amherst talk, a little bit of Stanley Cup playoff talk, a little bit of Sabres coach talk. That's on the way in a moment on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
He is a beat reporter for a team that has millions of fans. It is so ridiculous how many people he has blocked on Twitter over the most ridiculously stupid things. The man needs to grow up. He needs to have a little bit thicker skin.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Paul's coming up in a moment. Stanley Cup playoffs. Boston forces a game 7. They won in Toronto yesterday 4-2. The little rat scored an empty net goal to make sure the Bruins won.
Mr. Austin Matthews, after hearing about it, like, hey, where's Matthews been? He's got 5 goals in the last 5 games.
You know what? That reminds me. He's the Ted's Hot Player of the Week. This will kill 2 birds with 1 stone. So next hour, when we give you the cue to call, Ted's Hot Player, Austin Matthews. So don't forget. San Jose, speaking of forcing a game 7, double overtime, shorthanded goal by Thomas Hertl, and the Sharks win 2-1. Martin Jones. Did he have more saves last night than he did in the rest of the series?
Not quite.
No? But, is it close?
But close.
58 saves last night. I thought I saw a note. I think this is the most saves by a goalie since Hasek had 70 against the Devils in the four overtime crazy game.
Wow.
Tonight, Washington at Carolina, the Caps lead 3-2. Andre Svechnikov practiced with the team yesterday, so they're holding out hope that he could return tonight coming off the concussion. Nashville at Dallas, the Stars lead that series 3-2. Your Norris Trophy finalists, Mark Giordano, Brent Burns, Victor Hedman. Good news, no former Sabres on the list. The Amerks lose to Toronto. More on that in a moment from Paul. NBA playoffs, Golden State beat the Clippers. Boston sweeps out the Pacers. Toronto over Orlando and Portland down to Oklahoma City. The Warriors, the Raptors, and the Trailblazers all lead their respective playoff series 3-1. Yankees beat Kansas City but lost another player, Aaron Judge. No timeline, could be a significant injury. It's an oblique strain. The Jays beat Oakland, the Mets lost to St. Louis, and CT Pan wins the RBC Heritage Open on the PGA Tour. Our NHL playoff scoreboard has been brought to you by Fiegel and Carr, your border attorneys. Paul is standing by on the West Her Hotline, and he's going to talk some hockey with us. Paul's segment brought to you by Losi and Ganji, Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys, working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers. Happy Dingus Day, Paul. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
I'm good. I forgot to wear red, but my oatmeal bowl was red, so hopefully that counts. So you were in Rochester yesterday for Game 2 of the Amerks and the Marlies, and I'm following you on Twitter, and the game seemed to be going fairly well for Rochester until the first minute or two of the third period.
It was going great. I mean, Howard, for 40 minutes, they gave up nothing. 12 shots, I think maybe one was that Wedgwood had to make a really good save. I mean, they by playing the defense that they were playing, it was causing turnovers and helping them come up ice and get chance after chance after chance at the other end. But I mean, the thing is, they're playing the backup goaltender. I mean, this is the guy who's been backup for most of the season. His numbers are his save percentage isn't even up over 900, and he is absolutely stoning them in two games. I mean, they're making him look like Patrick Waugh back there, and they were basically playing perfect hockey for 40 minutes. They did go out to a 2-0 lead. They did get two by him, but they should have had probably nine by him by then. They were hitting posts. They were missing wide open nets. They were shooting at him, multiple outnumbered situations off those turnovers. I mean, just playing a perfect game. And then their captain, who scored the second goal, took a really dumb penalty, a slashing penalty coming up ice 51 seconds into the third. And the one thing the Amerks have not been good at against Toronto is killing penalties and on the power play. They can't seem to score on the power play, and they can't kill penalties. And their captain takes a dumb penalty, and it took 8 seconds for Toronto to score to make it 2-1. And less than a minute later, they score again. It looked like the Amerks panicked a little bit, and then not next thing you know, it's 2-2. And it all happened in less than 2 minutes of the beginning of the third period. And what really aggravates Chris Taylor is they've got two guys who are basically their big scorers. And the Amerks, they've been telling him, they've been wanting to shut them down. Toronto has 7 goals in this period, and Chris Muller has 3 goals and 2 assists, and Jeremy Bracco has 2 goals and 2 assists, and those are the two. And Bracco scored the tying goal. He scored the winning goal. And he was just beside himself. It's like, I can't believe we're letting these guys loose around our net. And three guys, if you include the goaltender, are basically beating them and having them up 2-0.
Yeah. Muller's a local kid, right? Isn't he from Western Europe? Okay.
He is.
Is there anybody, when you went out to the game yesterday, Paul, were there any players you were particularly interested to watch from the Amerks perspective?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wanted to see Olsson and Asplund, especially Asplund. You know, the improvement that he's shown throughout the season. So I was, really looking forward. And, Olsson, neither one have points in this series. Olsson has 3 posts, had another one again yesterday afternoon, beat the goaltender clean and hit the post again. And, I think these are young players who are learning that the playoffs are a whole different ball game than the regular season. You have to be just a little bit better, you know, and just a little bit hungrier and just a little bit harder on the puck. And I think that, you know, that's the thing. Asplund and Pilot and Olofsson, they've combined for no goals and no assists in two games. And, you know, that's, you know, those are guys that they've really been hurt, you know, depending on. Danny O'Regan, a guy they depend on. Nothing. No goals, no assists. And, you know, hasn't come through. So I think that's the thing that, you know, they have to learn, that the playoffs are a whole new ball game from what they experienced in the regular season.
How confident are you? With Olofsson, how confident are you? Like, I'm thinking it's a lock he's going to be here at the beginning of the season. Should I? I mean, how confident are you? He is here, out of camp, and on one of the top two lines.
I think he's ready, yeah.
Okay.
No, I think he's ready. I think he needed to be in Rochester the way he was. A lot of people are, he should have been up here in December. No, he shouldn't have been. You know, he had to learn the game. He had to learn what he was doing. And, you know, he wasn't getting, you know, he was getting more and more scoring chances as the year went on because he was learning the game and knowing that, hey, it's different playing on the ice surface here. I'm not going to have as much time as I had in Europe because Europe, with the bigger ice surface, you have more time to make plays. And, you know, those are the things he had to learn. Asplund, you know, Brayton was talking about last time I was in there with you how he, of anybody else there, he's probably come the longest way. I mean, from start to finish in the beginning of the season where, you know, he wasn't producing at all. But by the end of the season, he was one of their best producers. And really, it had come a long, long way in his game and the way he was learning his game. And as a forward that can play offense and play defense, you know. So in Olofsson's case, I think he needed the year in Rochester. I think he's still learning, but I think he is ready. And I think he showed us he was ready when he came up and played. And yes, I do think he'll be in their lineup on opening day.
Paul is with us on our Wester hotline. We'll get to the Sabres coach search in a moment. Paul was in Rochester yesterday covering the Amerks' second game of their playoff series with Toronto. Joe in Rochester, you're on WGR with Paul. Go right ahead.
Hey, guys. How you doing this morning?
Good. Thank you.
Paul, I just got a question for you. I actually went to game one for the Marlies and the Amerks, and, you know, I was intrigued to see how Tage Thompson would do, especially being up, you know, in the NHL all year. I figured, okay, this guy should dominate. You know, he should dominate these guys. And he was just, I thought he was terrible. He just wasn't moving his legs to me. He wasn't creating anything. And I just thought he was a non-factor on the ice. I think he's constantly turning over pucks, too. Just didn't impress me at all. I want to know your thoughts on it, Paul.
He did have their only goal that game, but it was very, very late. I thought he was okay last night. I thought he had a turnover or two. I mean, he, you know, but other than that, I thought he was moving his legs. I thought he did have some good scoring opportunities. He was getting in on the into the zone. So, I thought he battled pretty well in the game that I watched yesterday too. I thought he, you know, behind the net, a couple of times he was engaged in battles. He showed up into some scrums where, you know, he kind of shied away from those when he was in the NHL because there's no question he needs to get stronger. I mean, in the off season, he really has to get some upper body strength and get stronger so he can use that big frame of his to his advantage. But you know, I thought in game two, I thought, you know, he played pretty well. I thought he was fine.
And I also thought that in game two, he's getting a little more active with his stick too. I know that, you know, he made a nice play in the first period where he made a nice stick check, and that resulted in him getting a breakaway chance. And I think those are the type of things that we need to see from him more at the NHL level, Paul, like you said, compared to what we've seen in the AHL level. Because I think he's doing everything, just about everything right in the AHL. Again, it hasn't been perfect for Tage Thompson, but I think that it's been looking pretty promising at the fact that he's just getting his confidence back down in the minors, and then hopefully that'll translate well to the NHL next season.
And by getting a stick in the pass, something like that, that was a breakaway from – that was a long breakaway. I mean, he went blue right line all the way in. And, again, that was another opportunity that they need to finish on because he was in alone, but – It was good anticipation, and with that long reach of his, he can do more of that, getting his stick in the passing lanes and getting the puck up ice after that.
Paul, I want to ask you about a tweet in regards to Alex Nylander, and it's a two-parter. What's going on with him and his injury, and your tweet about how – I know you had to clarify, because I read your initial tweet about Nylander being out longer typically than the team usually says, and I thought, are you trying to – am I reading between the lines that you think Nylander should have been back quicker? Can you go through all that stuff, please?
Yeah, no, that wasn't anything on him.
Okay.
It was on the team. It's three times now he's had an injury where the team makes it sound like, well, it's just a minor thing. He'll be fine. He'll be back soon. It's a day-to-day. And next thing you know, 3 weeks later, you're going, where is he? He's not even practicing. You haven't seen anywhere around him. And it had nothing to do with him personally at all. It's how the team handles him. And it drives me crazy how the team handles injuries, this team. I mean, Jason Bottrell has a policy. Quite honestly, I think he's made Phil Housley look foolish many, many times because Phil didn't know what to say. And, it's like the king's secret or something. So, it's how the team handles things. They make his injuries sound like they're very, very minor. And, well, he'll be back. Don't worry about it. He'll definitely be back for the playoffs and this, that, the other. And next thing you know, you don't see hide nor hair of him. And that's why I clarified it, because people thought I meant that, I was ripping into him, and had nothing to do with him. It was the way the team handles him and how they handle, announcing what's wrong with him.
Do you think he'll still be in the organization come training camp?
I don't know. I don't know where they're at with him. I thought he should have made the team coming out of training camp, to be quite honest with you. I thought he had a very good training camp. And then, I don't know, it was an up-and-down season for him. But then he got really hot, and they called him up. And in the beginning when he came up, I thought he played pretty well. But then I thought it tailed off again. As his time up in Buffalo went on, he stopped moving his legs, I thought, and it was started to get more standing around. He wasn't getting as many opportunities. You didn't see him along the wall. With him, the thing is, you know if he's playing well, because he's either standing around waiting for the game to come to him, or he is pressing and getting in there. And in the beginning, he was pressing and getting in there and looked pretty good. And then it just seemed to go stale on him. That's a tough one. There are times you see him and you go, yeah, he's getting it. It looks like he's getting it. Then there's times it's like, maybe he's not getting it. So I don't know where they are with him.
Paul, when are they going to hire a coach?
Well, I think one of the reasons they're sitting on it now is the coaches they are interested in probably are still coaching right now and in playoffs or in. So I think that's why you're looking at there, what we're looking at there. And I don't know if we're talking about AHL coaches. I don't know if we're talking about overseas coaches. They've been pretty tight-lipped on, what they're looking at and what they want. The McClellan thing got out, but other than that, they've been pretty tight-lipped on. And don't forget, when they were looking at Housley, he was with Nashville, and they went all the way to the end.
Yeah.
So it was a long time before, they wound up hiring a coach, because that's who they were looking at, because Bugner got hired a little bit before Housley did, and then Housley got hired.
The other guy I want to ask you about is Skinner. What do you think? Is it going to be quiet till July 1st? Could he sign before then? Do you think it's just at this point now, is it almost a given he goes to the market? How does that play out?
I don't think it's a given. I mean, he said himself that he didn't really want to deal with it as the season was going on, and now he's going to give it a lot of serious thought. He goes, it's something that needs a lot of serious thought, and it's something that he hadn't done before that, so he said it's not going to be something that happens overnight. And he wants to look at everything, including staying with the Sabres, and it was just something that, he really wanted to kind of wrestle with and look at all the options. So, and he was pretty upfront about it, that it's not going to be an overnight type of process.
Well, I was going to have you do a complete breakdown on Dmitry Kulikov's series against the Blues. That's going to have to wait for another day. I'll get back to you on that one, okay? I bet you, I'm sure you were really you know, glued into watching him play for the
Jets. I think he's a Conn Smythe Trophy candidate. So.
Well, after round one, I guess he's not going to really play much more after round one now. All right, Mr. Hamilton, nice to see you're still working for us. Thank you for coming on.
Take care, guys.
All right, Paul. Paul brought to you by Losi and Ganji, Buffalo's workers' comp attorneys working hard for hardworking Western New Yorkers.
Care to guess the date on the calendar that the Sabres hired Phil Housley?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me today's date because I could get that, April 22nd. So let's see. When did the playoffs end? Mid-June-ish. So June 12th.
June 15th.
Oh, okay.
That's a long way away.
Well, they didn't. I mean, they were waiting on the GM, too.
That's right.
I mean, Bottrell's was Bottrell, like, hired? I know you. When was he announced?
He was
May
after,
11th.
Yeah, the second.
Okay,
round
so he
ended.
Could. He was obviously, yes, he was doing stuff. He was talking. He could have talked to candidates.
That's from the Sabres right. website.
So he could have been doing all that stuff, right? I'm trying to recall. And he just, but if he was waiting on Housley, he had to wait till mid June. So yeah, June 15th.
Mid June.
I'm gonna say it comes sooner than June 15th this year.
Yeah, I would think
I'm
so.
Trying to think, like, who could they possibly be waiting on that might be on a staff that could make it to the Stanley Cup Finals? But I don't feel like that's going to be an issue this year. 803-0550 to join us. By the way, our Sabres coach watching WJR brought to you by Straight Up Wines and Liquors. Go straight up Elmwood to Washington and Kenmore for savings, selection, and service. We are talking NFL draft top of the hour. Sal's going to be with us. You can check out his article on the Bills and whether they should trade up, trade down, stay at nine. That's one of the things we will be talking about that's available for you to read right now at WGR550.com.
I'm going to read you a tweet that was sent to me, a whining tweet for the Wine Alliance. How do you like that? You like the idea?
I'm all in.
All right, here you go.
I was trying to find what I want to whine about anyway, so this will help.
Well, John Vogel had a piece up. Maybe it was who was it that reported Rickard Gronberg's name was thrown into the mix?
Scott Burnside.
Yeah. So Coach Mark on Twitter wrote, because nothing represents the heart and determination necessary to succeed in the NHL like a Swedish hockey.
I don't even know where to go.
Like, do you watch the league? The guy that is, let's look at the Norris Trophy. Hey, there's Victor Hedman.
Yeah.
Oh, Brent Burns and Mark Giordano, but there's Victor Hedman. Hey, look at the number one pick last year. That's Rasmus Dahlin.
Hey, Eric Carlson's all right.
It sure is. But it's the typical opinion that you can't work hard if you're skilled, right? Oh, Victor Hedman, he must not be all that tough. He doesn't have much heart because he's super skilled. If you're really skilled in Swedish, you can't have tried hard.
I feel like it's honestly, I think he's going more for the we need a coach who instills toughness and discipline, and clearly no Swedish coach would be able to do that.
Right, I guess.
Because they don't play with toughness and discipline.
Are not that many Swedish pluggers?
I couldn't even. That's what I'm saying. Like, whatever. I just find the right coach. If it's Gronberg or Ronberg or anybody with a Berg at the end of his name, fine. Who, you know, the whole idea of, unless you, here, Craig Berube, go get a guy who was a tough guy and he'll be a good head coach.
Right.
You know, is that, we haven't gotten that text yet, have we?
Not yet.
All right. I got nothing to whine about.
Nothing?
I was going to whine about the, there was a story over the weekend. Looks like the NFL is heading towards full-time officials. Pfft. Guys,
I look forward to no longer getting that call and having the same complaint. Well, yeah. complaints about officiating.
Right, there'll never be mistakes anymore.
Right.
Hey, you know what? Full-time officials, guess what? They're also robots. They're not human beings, they will never make another human
mistake. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I do not think it will make
any difference. I think it's misguided.
I just don't think it'll make any difference.
Yeah.
Go for it. Congratulations, NFL. Do it. You remove that complaint. But in reality, I don't think anything changes.
It's funny. This is maybe it's my sick, twisted way of looking at things. When I saw the story, first I thought, you know, you're barking up the wrong tree. And then my other thought was, like, these guys, the guys who work in the NFL, they're part time. They have full time jobs. Are these guys going to quit their full time jobs to go full time in the NFL where in theory, I guess, if you're graded out badly, you do lose your job. Like, why would they risk giving up a full-time job to go full-time in the NFL where they can get booted?
Right, there's a good point to be made that you might get...
You might have less qualified candidates, is where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Maybe people would not want to work in the NFL if it's a full-time job that I get graded on every year that I could lose and be out of work. I'm just going to keep my full-time job that I have now. And I'll work part-time in college football, assuming I think they all work part-time in college
football. Right, right,
right. So I thought about the candidate
field. The better refs would be working the part-time job because they don't want to get
up. They don't want to make it full-time.
Their law practice or whatever.
Right. So I just thought, what are we going up that tree for? All right, 803-0550 to join us. We have tickets to give away. Micah Hyde has a charity softball game coming up. He was in Friday. So he and some of his teammates are going to be playing at Salem Field on Sunday, June 2nd. It is a benefit game to benefit the Imagine for Youth Foundation, a charity that Micah has started. So if you'd like to try and go to the game, we're giving away tickets. We have a four-pack of general admission tickets. Again, it's Sunday, June 2nd, if I didn't mention that, at Salem Field. Minimum value of the prize, $40. General contest rules apply. Call now, and we'll give away a four-pack to caller 5 and another four-pack to caller 6 at 644-9878. Okay, 644-9878. Call now, and hopefully we'll get you some tickets for the Micah Hyde charity softball game Sunday, June 2nd at Salem Field. If you don't win tickets, you can always buy them. They are available online right now at Bisons.com.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.